Esther Wallace was convinced to play basketball at 15 years old, and from the minute she stepped on the court, she fell in love. With athletics, she was able to experience both successes and failures, which ultimately helped her develop her leadership traits and sent her on her way to becoming the entrepreneur she is today. Through basketball, she was able to travel the world, meet some phenomenal teammates, but the thought always lingered in her mind. Would it have been different if she started playing at a younger age? She then began to put more thought into why she hadn't discovered her passion for basketball sooner, and the idea of representation came to mind. Maybe if she was able to see herself in these famous athletes, maybe if there were more images of Lisa Leslie, maybe more televised women's basketball games, then maybe she would have discovered her passion sooner. This thought led her to the birth of Playa Society Sportswear, a brand and a community for women in sports. Through Playa Society, Esther Wallace is creating a better future for athletes where female representation in sports is no longer an afterthought, but it's a must. Now, this episode was recorded back in December, but it's going live right after the mess that is the NCAA Planning Committee for March Madness. As much as I would have loved to have connected with Esther regarding her feelings here, you really don't have to look far to understand where Esther and Playa Society stand. Their social pages are very, very apparent on where they stand on this matter. The NCAA's complete failure to provide even close to equal practice facilities and amenities shows that there is so much work to be done in this space. And I feel lucky that I was able to interview Esther about Playa Society, a brand and community that she is building. Over the years, I have heard it all while playing sports at all levels of play. Hearing things like, I'd watch it, but you guys can't even hit each other. It's such a soft sport. And why would I watch insert sport name here? It's so pointless. It didn't matter that we made playoffs every year. It didn't matter that we were great. It didn't matter that I was a six-time all-conference player in two sports at the Division III collegiate level. It didn't even matter that I played two sports at the Division III collegiate level. It didn't matter that I held records and that 8 years later I still hold them. All that mattered was that I was a female, and because of that, I didn't stand a chance at being considered an elite athlete to many of the people I went to school with. This is why I'm so invested in Playa Society, because I, like many of you listeners, have a personal connection to this. Maybe if young girls, and especially young boys, grew up with exposure to women's sports, they would actually grow up respecting women's sports. Now, without further ado, I am excited to be breaking our episode hiatus with episode 52 featuring Esther Wallace, founder and lead designer of Playa Society. Hey, Fem Radio, this is your host, Melissa Goncalves, and I am here with Esther Wallace. Esther, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me, Melissa.
So excited to have you. I have been trying to track you down for so long, and I'm gracious and grateful that you have, you know, opted to come on Fem Radio. You know, you're an entrepreneur. You are a badass. You're everywhere. I see your clothing from Instagram, on Facebook, on TV. I think what you're doing and your mission is incredible. But before we jump into that, I want to give our listeners a little bit of a background on who they're going to be hearing from today. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and give us some insight?
For sure. So from, you know, an overview, I am a designer at heart, design everything from graphics to apparel to footwear. It's something that I love to do, kind of self-taught, didn't get the chance to go to art school, which maybe you'll hear a little bit about that in today's discussion, but that's who I am at my core. I'm from Springfield, Massachusetts, the birthplace of basketball. Right now I really reside mostly in Boston. I like to be all over the place. Of course, this year, that's not quite the story, not quite the case, but yeah, that's me at my core. I mean, I'm very simple, laid back. I just am motivated by the path of design and visual arts and things like that. And of course, sports became a part of that story and has impacted my life and really shaped the trajectory of my life and who I am as a designer. So it's really cool to have that be a piece of it. And there's a lot of reasons why, you know, sports build character, sports teach you so many things. And so I've just been lucky to be able to incorporate that into who I am and allow that to mold me into who I am.
Absolutely. Can you give us some perspective into your early life? What were some of your dreams as a kid?
Really, probably the only dream that I had was to be a fashion designer. I can remember probably as early as I was in fourth or fifth grade, I was designing apparel. I wanted to go to the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York. That was my dream. And Vera Wang was like my dream designer. I used to say I wanted to be an intern for Vera Wang. I couldn't see past being an intern, being like 18 or 20 or whatever. So that was my dream. I could have set my heights a little bit higher for an internship, but that was really my core dream when I was younger, probably until I was 15.
I love that. That's so funny. Yeah, my dream is to be an intern for the Bureau of Wang. Well, you know what? At least you were more specific. I feel like if you had asked me when I was younger what my dream was, I'm like, I just want to be those women that walk down the street in the city with folders and a coffee in their hands. I don't really know where they're going, but that's my dream.
Well, that was probably my secondary dream was to be a street artist, so like the person that like sold their
Yes.
art on the side of the
I love that.
street.
Obviously, as you've been saying, right, fashion played a big part in your life and it was an interest. But how'd that come to be, right? Like, what do you think the roots were there?
I honestly couldn't tell you. It started with drawing. I guess that's really all I could say. I used to copy my brother and my cousins who used to draw, and I would just like follow behind them and sketch while they were sketching. But then like if anybody gave me a coloring book or like those old catalogs, I would always take a Sharpie and change how everybody looked in all of the catalogs and things and change their clothes and change their outfits. And then I would kind of get into the habit of cutting up my own things. So I think it was just more of the creative process of it. I mean, my grandmother was very creative as well, but I think it was really just like wanting to be creative and using apparel as a medium to express
Right.
that.
Right. Yeah. Needing that sort of that outlet to, yes. Yes. So, and somehow along this trajectory, you were convinced to play basketball, which is quite the opposite of my own life because they were trying to convince me to not play basketball. But you were ultimately convinced in high school. And despite you not necessarily wanting to play at first, you did end up getting a Division I offer to Fairleigh Dickinson. So can you tell us a little bit about this journey and really sort of focusing too on you not actually wanting to do it, but then you moving forward and doing it?
So I was very stubborn. I think it all really just stems from stubbornness. I was 6'1" by the time I was a freshman in high school. So before that, I mean, still, I guess I was taller than everybody else around me. And I had a math teacher in the 7th grade who was a basketball coach, and he would always tell me to play basketball. But like, it's one thing for someone to tell you to play basketball, but then when you actually see it, so it wasn't until I saw Tina Charles when I was I saw her when I was a sophomore in high school, and then after her it was Candace Dupree, Candace Parker, and all of them. That's when I was like, oh, like I want to be like them. Instead of just being told you should play basketball because you're tall, I think that's really where my resistance came.
Right.
I didn't understand the reason because I couldn't see it. Still can't really pinpoint why I joined the basketball team or how somebody convinced me to join the basketball team, but it was almost like an instant like falling in love. And I think it was I had that competitiveness in me, and
Right.
that's what drew me to basketball was that competitiveness, the energy, the hype, all of that. I just became kind of addicted to it.
Right. Do you ever think about, going back to that time and it not being something that you were ultimately originally interested in, but you did pursue? Do you ever think about what your life would have been like had they not sort of coerced you in that direction?
No, I mean, I would be afraid to know where I would be right now if I didn't play basketball. I probably would just be, on the sidewalk selling my art or trying to sell my art. Maybe I don't know if anybody would buy it. But I couldn't imagine because I didn't like being in school. Like I didn't like the classroom setting. So I did well in school grade-wise, but I just didn't like I couldn't find a fit anywhere else, other than the art class. Our class and the basketball court were really the only places that I fit in. So I probably would have went to art school and maybe found a path through art school, but I don't know where I would be without basketball.
Wow. So after you did ultimately graduate from college, you had just had those years of playing basketball, doing something you loved. Did you jump right into the worst?
No, actually, I
I had a plan. I had it all figured out, you know, because I fell in love with basketball. I was really into, obviously, playing, but I was also inspired by Pat Summitt and Vivian Stringer and Dawn Staley, so I wanted to be a coach. And so, you know, I was one of those people that planned everything out. I was going to graduate from college, play overseas for 3 or 4 years, and then work my way up as a Division I basketball coach. But things kind of didn't take that path. I had some injuries my senior year. I still went overseas to play, but I decided to only play one season overseas. That was a phenomenal year overseas because I actually ended up getting my master's degree coaching and playing. And that master's degree was really key because I met so many people through that process. That's where I started to think about other options outside of basketball and coaching. And so when I came back from overseas, I did end up starting a marketing job. I had two options. My first day of work at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, which is where I got my marketing job, my first day, as I was walking in, I got a call from Reebok offering me an apprenticeship. And wow. Of course, I wanted to go the route of, you know, designing sports apparel or, you know, athletic wear. But I actually ended up turning that job down because in the back of my mind, I knew I wanted to try and do something on my own without being restricted to another brand. So that's really the path that I ended up taking.
Wow. That's actually super powerful. Turning down a job at Reebok, right? I imagine, was that a difficult decision for you in your mind, or you were just like very like tunnel vision to your goal?
It was definitely difficult because it's hard to have tunnel vision on a goal that's not really defined, right? Like, I want to do this thing, but I don't know what it is that I want to do. I just know that I want to do something, right? And it doesn't have any kind of concrete, like visual for me to kind of tie that desire to. So it was definitely difficult. But at the time, I did have a mentor that used to work at Reebok and did something kind of similar. He started his own business. So I got to kind of pick his brain a little bit about which path to take. And he let me know that, you know, if you're going to start something on your own, you're going to need to get paid while right. You're going to need a stable job where you're getting paid. So that's why I ended up kind of going the MIT route because it had some stability there.
Mm. Yep. No, that makes perfect sense. I feel like that's how a lot of people think in the concept of the side hustle, right? Mm-hmm. Is you know, you have your dream, this passion that you want to pursue, but you also need to sustain your life and pay for your, you know, pay your bills. Mm-hmm. So how do you achieve both? You know, you do the 9 to 5 and then you do the 5 to 9 mm-hmm. or however you decide to structure that. So mm-hmm. it seems like from listening to your story that, you know, you had already had this concept in your head of you wanting to potentially start your own business. And with Play a Society, you get the rare opportunity to actually combine and marry both of your passions with fashion and basketball into one. How did you ultimately come up with this concept?
The thing, like early on, especially, I think still a little bit, but definitely early on, everything was moving based off of instincts. When I look back, I'm thinking like, you know, my instincts really kind of carried the whole process. So it wasn't like, you know, write it down on a piece of paper and it all makes sense and I didn't have like this business plan that strategically laid everything out. I knew that I knew the why before I knew the how or the what. So really the mission kind of carried the whole process. I knew I wanted to create something that I felt like didn't exist for me or other women like me who played sports and wanted to celebrate what it is to be a woman in sports or female athlete. That's all I knew. I didn't know if I was going to be making t-shirts or what I was going to be doing. And then I would just kind of design one thing at a time and kind of see how everybody responded to it. And when I designed the female athlete t-shirt, that's where the concept really developed for Play a Society. So I designed the shirt before Play a Society even existed. And I kind of sold a few of those before I launched the brand. So it wasn't really streamlined or planned out.
Right. And what year was this when you first started to launch that that original design?
So I started designing t-shirts in 2015. And then I designed the female athlete t-shirt in 2017. And then I launched Play a Society in 2018.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So it's pretty much, would you say it was that design itself that really propelled you? Like, this is the right this is the right outlet for me.
Yeah, because it was a process that evolved. And I will also add that I was, sometimes you know what you want to do, but you're afraid to say it, right? And so early on, like in 2015, I probably knew that I needed to design something that had that message, but mm-hmm. I was afraid, or I didn't know if there was a market for it. So I started out designing like basketball t-shirts that were just gender neutral. And then that evolved into basketball t-shirts for women. And then I made the female athlete t-shirt because, you know, see that process where I was like, let me see if they like this. And then it was like, well, let me see if just women are going to interact with me on this. And then it was like, okay, like let's bring all women into this and see how they respond. So it was definitely a process, but it makes sense when I look back at it.
Right. I think the first time too that I saw the female athlete shirt, it had to have been, I think it was on a WNBA star when they were like walking into the arena. And then I can't timestamp it in my head, but you know, sometime later I saw one of my friends on Instagram at the gym and she had it on, and then she had tagged you guys in it. And I went right to the page and ordered my own. I'm like, yes, I finally found it.
Yeah. I mean, that's also one of the things, like it's crazy to believe how many people were with me from like day one who saw this shirt and were just like had an amazing response to it. And the WNBA players that were with me from day one. So even like I could probably pinpoint who was walking into the gym. You know what I mean? Right. Like you say, you saw somebody, it was probably Elena Delladone who was from day one, or Candace Parker or Sylvia Fowles. Like there were a few players who were just down from the beginning, and I appreciate them so much.
That's awesome. So yeah. I love that. So you had this, you know, you had the shirt, right? You had the designs, you launched Play a Society. What would you say was step one after you decided, okay, I'm going to go for it. We're making a brand out of this. We're creating a business out of this.
Well, I think it was realizing when I launched the female athlete t-shirt, like, okay, this is cool. This is great. And like, it can really just either take its course, or I can do something right now to make it into something that I can like build and grow, right? So that's where the decision came. I need to brand this and build this brand. And that's where Play a Society came. But once Play a Society came into existence, it was really, again, I was moving off of instinct a lot. And for me, having limited resources and being someone who has always kind of had limited resources, it was more of assessing what I had and figuring out mm-hmm. how to use that to my disposal, right? So I knew that I could design. I was a good designer, and that's my bread and butter. So let me just keep making things. Like I built a website. I created like this social media presence that looked, I don't know, kind of aesthetically pleasing. And I kept designing whatever products I could. So I just used the tools that I had. I knew what I didn't have, which was money and connections and all of that stuff. But how can I kind of leverage what I do have?
That's a great point. And I want to just focus on that for a bit, is people who want to start businesses. I've spoken to a lot of, especially females too, right, where they focus so much on what they don't have and why they can't do something, and not so much on what they're bringing to the table in that same regard, right? Okay, you don't have money, but in your case, you had design skills. So this is what I'm bringing to the table, right? The money thing we can tackle when the time comes, but right now I can create that prototype. I can create that concept.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, though, for me, I always kind of look back to my own experiences as the only blueprint that I really have. You know what I mean? Nobody in this world exists that has the same toolbox that you're going to be working with, right? So it's going to be hard to look at somebody else and say, this is what they did and this is how they did it, and figure out how you can do it, right? You kind of have to look at your own story and figure out, okay, this is what I did when I didn't know how to play basketball and I needed to figure out how to get a scholarship. Well, how can I apply that to like not having anything and not knowing how to build a business, but needing to do it? Right. So it's a lot of looking back and figuring it out.
Right. I think too, the next step, especially in apparel and a lot of times in just product in general, right? When entrepreneurs are trying to come out with a product, is you have the concept, you have the design, but then it comes down to the manufacturing of the product, right? And that seems to be where a lot of people get stuck, because we're in the information age, right? Where everything, you know, we're inundated with the information. So even when you do head to Google, sometimes it can be quite overwhelming. Can you walk us through the process of you finding a manufacturer to actually print your clothing and what that process was like?
I think that you have to be willing to go through trial and error. And right. sometimes it'll be a hit the first time and you won't have to experience like any type of failure, but you have to be willing. I think that's a big fear, especially like when I started, I only had like $2,000, right? So right. if I waste any of this money, then where am I going to get this from again?
Right.
You know, it took me like, I don't know, like years to save $2,000. So it can be kind of scary, but you have to kind of put yourself out there and be willing to figure it out. And so that's really what my process was. I was able to use the resources that were right near me, you know, and it's mm-hmm. not, you might have this grand scale of what you want to accomplish, but you have to start somewhere. And so for me, it was realizing that, you know, I'm not going to start manufacturing overseas or anything like that. I have to start right here where I have access to something. And so, you know, sometimes it's starting small and then growing when you get there.
That's a very good point. Did you reach any blockers during this process that made you maybe think to yourself, this won't work, or I need to, you know, change what I'm doing or anything like that?
I'm sure I did. But every time I think about like challenges or roadblocks or anything like that, it's funny because I don't think I ever see them as that. Every time something happens in my world, I kind of look at it and think, you know, well, how do I get around it? Or what do I do, instead of actually acknowledging it as being in my way? it's kind of like I step over the problem, or you know, right. address it however it's needed. So it's funny because I don't think I ever take the time to sit back and process like, oh, this is a problem, or this is in my way, or this is something's not gonna work. I don't think that's ever really been an option for me either. Like I could never sit here and say, this isn't going to work. I put everything into this, so it has to work. So if something gets in my way, I have to find a way around it. So I can't think like that.
Yeah. That's a big mindset thing, right? I think so many people will be like, oh, well, you know, this could happen and that could happen. I mean, I'm definitely like that, right? I play a pros and cons game for almost everything I do, but it's true. It's a mindset shift. If you think only bad things are going to happen, the chances of bad things happening is probably a lot higher than if you're like, nope, this is going to work. No choice. This is happening.
I mean, even going back to basketball, I was always that player that was like, it doesn't matter who we're playing against. I mean, I think we can win.
Right.
And it could be the most ridiculous like disparity in teams. And I'm like, no, we're gonna win this. And even you know, even when we get into the game and we might not win and we might lose by 100 points, but at the beginning, I thought we were gonna win.
So Play a Society launches. What was the initial feedback you received from actual consumers, even celebrities, right? Even all these famous athletes. Like, what was that feedback like for you?
I think I can say first is Candace Parker was the one who wore my shirt like on a grand scale. Like she wore it on KG's Area 21, and never, I mean, I hadn't spoke to her, you know, like my first time actually speaking to her was maybe like a year or so later. So obviously there wasn't any kind of verbal interaction or feedback between the two of us, but what that did was kind of give me this sense of obligation and validation. Not that we should seek validation from these things, but it really added that momentum for me where it was like, you know, oh my goodness, like Candace Parker believes in this message. I can't let her down. You know what I mean? It became this thing where like, if so many other women are connecting with this message and this brand, I have to like be this catalyst and see this through. And so I would get, you know, messages and stories from different female athletes on social media, all levels, high school, sometimes middle school, college, and professional athletes just kind of giving me like a high five here and there. So, I mean, it means a lot because it keeps that momentum going and it keeps that kind of purpose driven mindset going. It's good to have that reassuring feedback.
Absolutely. I think it's such a good point too. And just for anyone listening that isn't exactly sure sort of the female athlete shirt, obviously you can Google it or go to playasociety.com. But I think it's important to note too, it's essentially like female athlete and then the word female is crossed out. And I think that also on top of everything, as far as feedback goes, to see someone at such a high scale, like Candace Parker is that athlete, right? Like she is that athlete. So when she's sharing something like that, it's almost like proof. Yeah, we need this, right? Like we need this mission. This is so important. I feel like she, you know, she gets that all the time being in the public eye, the comparisons, all these things. And Playa Society is known for shining a light on female representation in sports. And in your words, why do you think it's so important to focus on female athletes and female athletics in general?
Well, I think that there are a lot of reasons. I think that in its simplest form, I mean, equality is equality. And, you know, there's no reason why in 2020 anyone should tell a woman or any person what they're capable of because of any aspect of who they are, because of their gender or where they come from, or, you know, what resources and privileges they have afforded to them. I don't think anyone should be capping anyone's potential. That's not the world we should live in. And especially for women, I mean, women shouldn't have to prove themselves in 2020. So we can start there.
Right.
But then it's also about one thing for me, it's never about me. And I think that when it comes to, you know, my brand really caters to women who are already there, who are already athletes, but it's not so much about us. It's about the girls and those who look at us, and who will be inspired by us. Because if we have the ability to inspire them and encourage them, they'll be better in the long run and they'll be able to make more strides and to contribute more to the world than we were able to do and we're able to do now. So it's not about us so much. It's about the next generation and those who will follow in our footsteps.
That's such a great point and perspective. And I think it's important to note that there's sadly, you know, not a lot of people who do think that way, right? There's a lot of women I've even encountered in corporate America who get to that certain role and they almost shut it off to everybody else, right? And they become so centered around their own personal success, but not necessarily in the focus of the entire generation of people that are following us and looking to us for those role models, right? And those mentors. So I love that that's your perspective, but also what you're building, right? Where it's not necessarily about all of us who are already athletes, who are already in this life, but it's for everyone who's coming up behind us and wants to be inspired and wants to feel included. And that's really huge.
Again, that's a perspective that I come from, right? I needed to see Candace Parker and Candace Dupree, or else I wouldn't be here. So
absolutely. Yeah. Are there times that maybe you personally felt, I know you were just alluding to that, right, where you were not being represented or treated fairly in athletics as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the representation goes, as far as feeling like I didn't see what I needed to see, you know, I of course knew who Michael Jordan was, or I don't know, whoever. I didn't really watch basketball, but I knew I could probably name 10 basketball players that were men, but I probably couldn't name one that was a woman because they just weren't in my face. They weren't out there like the men. And so I think that that's kind of like, you know, a disservice. And I think that that's a big part of the inequality and this disproportional representation is simply just, are we seeing, do we have access? Now we're in an age where anyone can give us access to that, right? There's so many people on these digital platforms that do play a role in highlighting women's sports, so that more people can see these women perform. But I'll also say for me that I had the opportunity to be coached by a lot of men and to play against a lot of men as far as like practicing and learning the game, who didn't treat me any differently because I was a woman or I was a girl at the time. And so that really shaped me. And as I did grow a little bit older, like get to the college level or beyond that, and start to notice things that didn't align with that, men who didn't think that way, that really stood out to me. But I was in a position to kind of question it and challenge it because, you know, I wasn't used to it. So I think I felt a little bit more confident because I knew that there was a better way.
Right.
For us to like just coexist and just, you know, let's all play basketball because, you know, I've seen it done. It works. I'm an athlete, not a female athlete or to be boxed in or anything like that.
Wow. It's funny. Obviously, I played sports in college as well, and I always find it to be quite entertaining to see the difference, right, in how sort of the male athlete gets treated versus how like the female athlete gets treated. How important would you say it is to you to actually be a mentor and inspiration for others?
Well, for me, that's really the only reason why I do this. I don't think that if it was about me personally, I would get up and do all the things that I do in a day, or in a week or in a month. So for me, it really is about, you know, tying my mindset every day to the fact that one girl is watching. One girl somewhere knows who I am for some reason and is inspired by what I'm doing. And she's going to be the one to change the world one day, or she's going to be the one to make an impact. Yes. I'll make the impact on her, and she'll make an impact on the world or some capacity. So, I mean, whether you call it mentorship or inspiration or whatever you call it, you know, people need that, especially girls, young Black girls who probably don't see as much Black women in entrepreneurship or in sports or whatever it might be. It's needed. So I think it's one of the ways to move things forward. It's not the only way, but it's definitely one of the key ways.
One of my favorite quotes is actually, be the person you wish you had when you were younger. And mm-hmm. I've taken that, and that's, you know, how I tried to carry myself. I mean, obviously I didn't have as much exposure to the corporate life and things like that. So when I jump into those roles and that career path, I really try to sort of be a sponge and learn as much as I could so that I could ultimately be a mentor. And I think that it seems like that really is your life's mission.
I'm very purpose driven. So if that's another reason why, like, if I was still working that 9 to 5, like there was no purpose there. And so Right. Really the purpose was to build this that I'm doing now. And so if I don't have that purpose, I just can't function. I can't commit. And so that really drives me. I don't know how this will play out in the end, but I hope that purpose is there, and that mission is completed as far as inspiring somebody right. to do something.
So I'm going to switch gears a bit and discuss the dreaded, you know, we've talked about this in a few other episodes with some entrepreneurs, but the dreaded COVID-19, obviously it's affected so many small businesses. And I'm curious, have you had to make any changes to how you operate? Have you felt the negative effects of it?
For sure. I mean, personally and professionally, but again, I think it goes back to the mindset, seeing something as an opportunity instead of an obstacle. And so, I mean, my COVID story is like, I'll try and make it short, but so I had been working at MIT for the first 2 years, full 2 years of running Playa Society. And man, every day I would wake up and just like, I can't wait for the day when I can quit. And so I think it was actually at the end of last year, I had a friend who made me promise her that on like January 7th, I would quit my job. And so like I wake up one morning, I'm like, oh my goodness, it's like January 7th. What am I gonna do? And because of her, I quit my job. Like I quit MIT. I convinced myself that I was ready. Like I put together all these spreadsheets that literally didn't add up to me being ready, like financially at all. But I convinced myself like, oh yeah, like this is going to be great. I'm ready. Let's do it. And so I gave notice. I was in kind of like a senior management role. So I gave her like a month or 2 months, my boss. And like as that time was going down, right, like I think my last day was supposed to be March 30th or something. And then it was March 11th. And that's when the whole COVID started to take shape, at least in Boston.
Right.
And it was pretty pretty scary, but I was like, no turning back. Like, I've been waiting for this moment forever, for all my life, it felt like. So I was like, there's no way I'm turning back. And so I went through with it, followed through. And it was almost like, it was the weirdest thing where when it was my last day, or at least when it was my first day of full full-time entrepreneurship, it just felt like things just changed. Everything changed. Like, I was getting more traction and more orders, and I was immediately able to see the difference of me being able to put more time and just energy into Playa Society. So it was a scary time to navigate, but I turned it into more of an opportunity.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you that, if you did see a shift in your business after finally being able to dedicate 24/7 to this one thing that you've, you know, had to, you know, make a side hustle for the the previous 2 years. That's awesome.
Yeah. But I mean, I'll also, I won't want to sugarcoat it and make it seem like everything was like all rainbows, because, you know, of course, one with more responsibility, there's more obstacles, and there's just so much more right now that I'm trying to navigate and fix. And there's so many more problems that arise now. And some of that has to do with COVID, and some of that is just regular day-to-day business stuff. So it's not easy by any means, but just being able to make that decision. Sometimes you have to open up yourself to the universe's whatever it has in store for you, you know?
Right.
I almost feel like because I committed to giving my time, more time to Playa Society, it opened up doors and more opportunity, just allowed more things to happen.
Yeah. So Esther, tell us, what is next for Playa Society? Tell us what's next. What's on the roadmap here?
Well, I'm really excited about 2021. I think, well, everybody's excited.
Right.
And hopefully 2021 just brings everybody so much joy and prosperity and all of that. But I'm excited because just being in this position to be running Playa Society full time, I wake up every morning and all I want to do is design dope things. Like, that is literally what fuels me every day. And so I'm excited to be able to just design more. I want to create more. I want to do more. And I want to collaborate more. And so, like, that's really what's driving me. And that's what's next, is just more creation and more collaboration on creative levels too. So, like, I want to find different ways to just deliver a consistent message that women have a place in sports and all of that.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. I look forward to seeing the journey, because I think we're all just like, get rid of 2020. Let's throw the whole year away. So let's get on with it. But I think with everything happening in the world, and, you know, hopefully the vaccines and all those things, will be able to have a better summer this year than we did in 2020. But hopefully business will be booming. I wish prosperity for everybody in 2021. That's what I keep writing in everyone's cards. Happy holidays, prosperity, lots of money. Yes, for 2021.
Sure. I'm with you on that.
So I asked the same question to each of our guests, and it's, who embodies the word femme to you? And we use that word here at Femme Radio to really just describe an all-around trailblazer, an ally, a mentor for others. It can be male or female, a celebrity, someone in your personal life. Who's that for you?
I mean, there's so many people, and I'm thankful for the opportunities that I've had to have so many different, I don't like the word mentors because it feels so formal, but I've had right. So many people make an impact, whether it was just one Zoom call or 10 Zoom calls, you know what I mean? I've met so many women that could probably fit that description, but I would say number one for me, probably the woman that I draw the most inspiration from is my sister, who works in a completely different line of work, but she's so passionate about what she does. You can't get her to talk about anything except policy, public health, making an impact on people's lives, people who aren't afforded equal opportunities when it comes to things like social justice and criminal justice and all of that. And she's so passionate about it, and she does such great work. She's doing really important things on Capitol Hill and all of that. So she's the one.
I love that. You're such a powerful family. So where can our listeners follow you and the Playa Society journey on social media?
The best place is on Instagram at Playa Society. Love to interact with everybody as much as I can on there.
Awesome. Any last pieces of advice for our listeners?
For me, I just say number one is, and I've said it throughout, you know, our discussion here, but, you know, use what you have and do what you can with it. One of the quotes that I've always lived by is, I believe it was originally John Wooden who said, make each day your masterpiece. And for me, I always like that quote because I was like, oh, this is a basketball coach and like talking about masterpieces. So that's kind of like art. And so right. I just always love that quote because you can create anything you want from your day. You're in control of what you create as far as that 24-hour span goes. So whatever you do, just make sure it's better than the day before. It's beautiful. You're satisfied with it. Make it your masterpiece.
Esther, thank you so much for joining us on Femme Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad we finally got to do this.
I know.